The spring of 1948, I was fortunate to be asked to travel to Europe as a representative of the young Jewish community of America to see firsthand the devastation of the Holocaust and report back to American youth, period. I kept a diary, and I've been asked to turn over the diary for historical purposes, but I realize that there is a lot of unnecessary gibberish in this that was important to a 28-year-old medical graduate, but not to the history of Pittsburgh, period. Also, some of it is quite redundant, so I will dictate those portions that I think have relevance, period. It may therefore seem somewhat disjointed to anyone trying to follow the sequence. That is because certain parts are being left out. First comment, the first date is April 21st, 1948. Before dinner, we went out to shoot some pictures of a group of orphans setting off for Canada. There were about 30 of them. They spoke many languages. They were adequately dressed and looked healthy. And children do forget easily. And whatever they find in this new adventure will be better than what they have known before. I spoke in Yiddish to some of them, and they were very happy about leaving Europe. They were not concerned about where they were going, but only that they were leaving, and even the thought made them smile. The group that I was witnessing brought to a total of 560 children so destined, period. There were no ifs or buts concerning the importance of the UJF in the minds of these youngsters, period. This is a side comment for any listener. I tend to dictate in the form that I'm most accustomed to, and that's to a secretary who's going to transcribe the message, and therefore I punctuate as I go. So please don't be disturbed by that. Period. The next portion is extracted from a part of the diary on April 25th that refers to a trip that is a sightseeing trip to Versailles, and I quote, "I was accompanied today by a lovely French girl of Jewish descent on her father's side, who told me, at least as well as might be expected with the language difficulty, of the trials and tribulations she faced during the German occupation, how they lived in fear for their lives from moment to moment for a period of 4 years. Previous to that, she recognized no religion, but now she claims Judaism as her own. The Germans did not allow her for a moment to forget her birthright, and neither did the other unfortunates who kept them alive when food was unobtainable. They too were Jews. Can we learn from this? I doubt it. ? Paragraph, April 26th. Today a Polish transient told me, in amazement, that he read of restrictions against Jews in an American Jewish paper. He said, quote, "Even in Poland, in good times, we did not have this." Then, half afraid of offending me, he continued with, "This time it happened here, next time there." He was once a professor. Now he's learning to be a cobbler so that he can be assured of 3 meals a day. To him, there is only one salvation, that is Palestine. He said, "Now we have no country, nothing. Not even are we safe in America. At least there we will not be alone." Paragraph. In my visit to occupation training centers set up by ORT, in Paris, the same opinion predominated. There, people are learning trades so that they will be prepared, regardless of where they finally settle. An aside. This is an aside and doesn't appear in the diary, but one must appreciate that this is 1948, actually about 2 years after the termination of the war, a little more than that. And the bulk of the survivors, and if I recall my numbers, there were about 250,000 Jews still in Europe at that time, were still unsettled, living in what was called displaced persons camps, going to training centers such as this, set up by the ORT, and being essentially supported by the by what was called joint. Joint was a wonderful word in Europe in those days. How important it was. It was, in fact, so important that many people who were not Jews claimed that they were so that they could be guaranteed a free meal. Europe was still devastated. Currency was still in cigarettes. A carton of cigarettes could buy a very valuable collection of china, for example. So when I refer in this note to the fact that people that were, quote, wherever they would might settle, indicates that they still did not know where they were going. Nobody wanted these refugees. A few got to South America, a few to, I think, 1,000 to Canada, if I remember correctly. America turned them away, unless, of course, they could come under the quota of the country from of their nativity, of their of their birth. That meant that the Germans had a reasonable opportunity to come to the United States, because most of the Germans had, in fact, not survived. As I recall, there were 25,000 surviving German Jews in Europe, and there were 30,000 in Shanghai. But the other quotas, such as Hungarian, French, so forth, were quite filled, and therefore most of the survivors were excluded from coming to America. France allowed them to stay, but not to become permanent. Well, let me go on directly from my notes. Most of them liked France, but would prefer leaving Europe. One young girl said to me that she wants to go where no one will point her out for being a Jew. To her, that means only one place, and that's Palestine. Paragraph. The work accomplished in these training schools is amazing. They learn by making clothes for the children's homes, also supported by joint. Also supported by joint. Their work is excellent. Of course, most of these people were well-educated, even professional people, in their prior lives. Can I possibly imagine my friends and myself being satisfied with such trades to earn our livelihood? But of course, at one time, these people too thought such an idea preposterous. Can we learn from this? Question mark. Paragraph. Two people with whom I spoke were satisfied to stay in France only because they claimed they were too old to move anymore. And this might explain why at that time there were still many Jews who preferred to stay in Europe and did not want to move on to Palestine. Period. My comments regarding that is as follows. There was some argument that these people really didn't want to go to Palestine, and the people who opposed the Jewish state used statistics taken from people like this to prove their point. This next note has nothing to do with the Jewish survivors, but is only a comment on life at that time, that is, the mental set at that time. While visiting, while sightseeing in Pigalle, I met an acquaintance of mine from Baltimore, Maryland. We met by chance and spent the evening together. Nice guy, too. But as we entered a bar, he suddenly grabbed my arm and withdrew because he saw a Negro at the bar. To him, prostitution was obviously okay, but drinking next to a Negro, no, that was out. Well, that's pretty typical of how some minds work. There was no reasoning. He stuck to his guns on the subject, agreeing with my theories, but coming from Baltimore, he allowed himself this one exception to my logic. And as already stated, he's what we might refer to as a nice guy, an average American. If so, then what has the future in store for America, for the world, especially for a Jew? Paragraph, April 29th. This afternoon I saw despair, utter demoralization with complete lack of hope. I became confused. What is the good of all we are attempting to do when those for whom we direct our efforts give the least semblance of cooperation that is possible? This all came about at a temporary installation of transients who have some chance to immigrate to other countries. The home has been in operation for 18 months at no little cost to joint and accommodated 150 adults and children. And it might very well be a fine respite for the unfortunate people if they themselves were a psychologically normal group. Unfortunately, they are not and cannot be condemned for their plight. It makes our problem only more difficult. Many of these people wait 6 months or longer before their great chance arises. In the meanwhile, their lives are empty. Many of them will not even clean their own rooms, and they therefore have become squalid. They will not cook or participate in community spirit in any manner, period. It remains for us to provide these services at great expense, but unfortunately, caseworkers and psychologists are more expensive and unobtainable, so it is practically impossible to change their mental state. Even though it is obvious that this would be for the best of all concerned, period. I spoke to one old woman in Yiddish. She cried and told me her ills and her husband's ills. She asked, quote, "What is there for me to live?" unquote. Can I or you tell that woman to clean her room or find a job when she has been living in fear of death for so many years? And for what? The sins of the world? And there are sins, yours and mine, as well. However, there were children, innocent beings, cute ones too. I played with them, as I would any child. And they laugh and cry, just as do our children in America. Is this a fair upbringing? No, it is more than unfair. The countries of the world with barriers and quotas are committing an unjustifiable and unforgivable crime against these people. There is no God-given right to justify a continuance of situations such as these. And what can we do about it? Would that I could write more expressively on this subject. The next excerpt from this diary reflects more on a more normal life in Paris in 1948. I was invited to the home of Dr. Morgenstern. I met his daughter on the boat train, and because I helped her with her baggage, they insisted that I come. They have a splendid family, another case of intermarriage with complete happiness. Incidentally, he worked for the underground during the Nazi occupation. We discussed medicine, Paris, America, Brailovsky, Mussorgsky. It was a splendid evening. I am invited there for dinner on Friday, after which the daughter married and I will see Boris Godunov at the opera. I like this town more and more day by day. Paragraph, the next entry is entitled Children's Homes, Paris, April 30th. We drove through the French countryside yesterday on our way to children's homes. The landscape is truly beautiful, with homes large and small that just look downright romantic. The scenery was fresh and clean and quiet and seemed to be peaceful beyond man's ability to disturb. To tell about the children's homes physically or statistically would be simple, but these facts are not the ones of interest. Yet I find it almost impossible to describe the less tangible, more significant impressions that result from such a visit. My interest being primarily medical, I was amazed to see that these were normal, healthy, well-developed children. The dispensaries were empty. They had rosy cheeks and smiles a mile wide. Most of them were beautiful children. They may well have come from any group of American homes, in spite of all the hell behind them. As for superficial appearances, they were clean and their clothing was excellent. I'm sure much better than what might be found in some of our American orphanages. The homes themselves were excellent, located in the country, spacious, and only French country homes are, and being fairly well kept. This last statement may not be clear, so let me explain further. We saw one home that was spotless and in excellent repair, while another, with equal potentialities, was in disgusting shape. Since these were newly acquired homes, now under OSE, the French Agency for Children, subventioned by the Joint Distribution Committee, this latter case was beyond our blame, at least. This illustration, therefore, demonstrates a great problem that is and must be contended with in all of JDC subventional agency homes and institutions, that regardless of our standards, insistence and advice, and adequate appropriation of supplies and money, the final responsibility for a successful institution rests solely with the individual directors. The budget for employees has been small and must be kept that way. Good social workers are not available, and so these jobs fall to low-salaried men whose qualifications are not adequate, but at least the best obtainable. Now that we of the JDC have visited this new home, the necessary changes will be made, or OSE will have to answer for a failure. Paragraph. As I said, the words of detail on tangible evidence come so easily, but this is not of prime significance. I talked with some of the children and found them to be alert and bright. Many of them, in fact, all of them, have, over short periods, completely integrated themselves into French schools and the French language. They are so flexible, so easily adaptable to new situations, and so easy to forget their cruel memories. They sing and dance and play without inhibitions, or the mental blocks so frequently seen in those adults we've discussed earlier. They're taught to do handy work, and some that I saw, that work was excellent. Their drawings decorated the walls, and much of it smacked of talent. Period. Paragraph. But unfortunately, it might very well be, surely our money is doing wonders, and our social agencies are functioning on a level far superior to what might be considered satisfactory, or just satisfactory. But money and agencies and interested social workers and VIPs and calories and adequate clothing do not make for the psychologically healthy growing children. They need homes and love and individual attention. They must have attachments and must be given goals, obtainable ones, to which they might point their faith in their life. These are the very fundamentals that we take for granted and are therefore not seemingly realistic in our mental growth, but they are undeniable. Paragraph yesterday, tears filled my eyes and my heart as the realization of the cold facts came to mind. What chance of doing adequate justice to these wonderful kids do we have? Here are the figures. 150,000 children receive aid, either complete or partial, of which about one half are complete or partial orphans. The partial orphans are beyond our ultimate help and must rely upon family attachments, good or bad, as they may be under the present circumstances. But the full orphans are wards of the world. So the world has done to this date, : Canada will accept 1,000, Australia 300, and South Africa 400, total 1,700, a figure which hardly dents this vast problem. That is all. The irony is even more obvious when we find that most countries require younger children. But our orphans are not young children and infants. Because the way of killing parents, because the war and killing of parents has been over now for about 3 years. And before that, the birth rate was limited by Nazi experimentation on induction of premature labor, by starvation and by sepsis of delivery in the concentration camps. Of 15,000 children now in children's homes receiving complete support from our agencies, only 2% of those under 6 years of age are complete orphans, and only 18% of those under 10. Therefore, with health requirements added to this age problem, it is often found that compliance may not be completely possible, that is, compliance with admission requirements. In fact, it is extremely difficult. Paragraph. An adequate solution is not in sight. Palestine is ravaged by war, the outcome of which none of us can predict. The U.S. has done nothing in the last three post-war years to alleviate the problem. The consuls of every country except France are unflinching in their unwillingness to cooperate. And we cannot expect France, regardless of their hospitality, to continue with open arms if these children and the adults as well become public charges. So we must go on blindly as we have until the present time, serving on an emergency basis, but hoping, working, and praying for some solution, any solution, wherever and whatever it may be. Paragraph. This is entitled On North Africa, dated April the 30th. A most fortunate meeting yesterday was with a Madame Benatar, that is spelled Benetar, a native of France, lawyer by profession, having spent many years practicing in North Africa, where she has fought an unending battle against poverty and tolerance. against poverty and intolerance. Because of her interests and dynamic personality, she has been directing JDC operations in North Africa for several years. Until yesterday's meeting, this section of the world, with its large share of Jewish problems, was a complete blind spot in my scope. We talked for 2 hours, after which I saw pictures which substantiated the ugly facts which she so capably and descriptively passed on to me. An amateur like myself cannot possibly reproduce here this valid information in the vivid manner in which it was given to me. There are at present 500,000 Jews in North Africa living as second-class citizens, much worse off, obviously, than the deplorable position of the Negro in our southern states. They are a poor, impoverished, undernourished race, extremely backward, having suffered the repression of second-class citizenry for many, many years. That this is true beyond any of our imaginations is testified to by a non-Jewish doctor, Matthew, spelled M-A-T-I-E-U-X, of Casablanca, who has recently completed a book on this very subject. In his book, which is still on French presses, he states that at birth, the average weight of Moroccan babies is 6 pounds, as compared with an average of 7 pounds for Jewish babies. But regardless of this initial advantage, 70% of the Jewish babies die before reaching 1 year of age. Paragraph. This unfortunate situation is never the result of indifference on the part of the people involved, but stems from years of subjugation, inequality, and discrimination. In Morocco, for example, each law of the country applies to everyone but Jews. Laws for them are special edicts made by the Sultan and so specified. The courts will not, under any condition, decide a case in favor of a Jew, and these are special courts for Jews only. That the problem here is great, no one doubts. It is a disgrace to world dignity. It is a replica of the days of old under Haman, whose death we celebrate as Purim. But Haman never died, and the focus of evil has never ceased or even faltered. It is paragraph. It is interesting, however, that the Jews can participate in business. And because of this, about 10% of the 250,000 Jews in Morocco have become fairly well-to-do, according to Moroccan standards. Self-sufficient would be more appropriate in our standards. At this point, I must add that Madame Benatar asked me to dinner for the express purpose of advice on fundraising. Now get this. Last year, she raised in Morocco the equivalent of about $1 million from these people for combined Jewish charities. She knows well that this money could be used entirely in her own country, and it is ironical that she thought that I could be of some help in advising her. Paragraph. She told me of eyewitness accounts on three occasions of attempts to evacuate some of these people for Palestine by the Haganah. Twice the attempts were successful, and people with babies in their arms came to the shores and cried and pleaded that they might be taken aboard. They came by the hundreds. Since shore installations are under French rule, this went on uninterruptedly, because as I have learned more and more, and day by day without exception, the French are wonderful in helping. However, on the third occasion, the British State Department, in advance of the arrival of a Haganah ship, made strong protestations to the French government, and as we know, international politics being what they are, the French had no choice but to comply. They were good enough, however, to secretly warn Haganah against attempting the landing. The boat remained at anchor within sight of those on shore. Jews by the hundreds were there waiting, and even the women struggled out into the Mediterranean till the water splashed about their faces, pleading and begging that the ship might come and take them to Palestine. Of course, this is a French port, as already mentioned, but the picture is entirely different at inland borders under the control of the Sultan. Here they are forbidden to cross the border under penalty of 3 years' imprisonment for leaving the country. Paragraph. To me, this story and many others I have encountered recall biblical days, Egypt and the Dark Ages, the Inquisition, and so forth down the line of hate. It does not seem possible that in our quote modern unquote world such facts can still, well, such unpleasant facts can still exist. They do, however, and not far distant from us. Paragraph. Madame Benatar told me a story about our army that amazed her, because after all we stand for the four freedoms in the eyes of the world. In Casablanca, a very fine club was used by Negro troops who were eventually moved out. Later, American troops moved in, and the question of clubs arose. The officers wanted this same club at first, but when they heard that it had been used for Negro troops, they refused to take it and gave it to the GIs. For this, Madame Benatar was shocked, and being a respected, dignified, and admired member of her profession, her word could not be doubted by the Frenchmen, and so a story about America is spread. And it seems that day by day, stories as these are nurturing the seeds of distrust and dislike among other peoples toward the United States. To make matters seem even worse, it is, or at least appears to be, an accepted fact among middle-of-the-road educated people in Europe that freedom of speech in the U.S. has been curtailed. Three professional people, one French doctor, one English businessman, and one South African social worker, said to me, very bluntly, your country is purging communists today. What will it be in 6 months from now? Paragraph. So, from this fine humanitarian, Madame Benatar, I learned in amazement about disgraceful bigotry in North Africa. And reflecting this information, I realize how frightfully close it is to me and to my friends at home. Paragraph. Tuesday, May 4th. On Monday, David Rothman took me to see a JDC-sponsored canteen operated by COGISAR. That's the acronym for a long series of names that I can't remember. It's C period O period J period A period S period A period R period. This particular canteen hotel houses and feeds 100 transients. It was amazing to see that some of these people were well-dressed and well-situated. And it was hard to believe that they were charity cases at all. While others, and these being in the majority, were in the depths of physical and spiritual depression. But as I have found over and over again, so many of the distasteful findings are not the result of JDC negligence, but rather can be laid at the feet of the individuals involved. Paragraph. I met one young girl who spoke English very well, and I took advantage of this fact to question her closely about conditions. She had come from Palestine for the express purpose of escorting her 70-year-old father to Argentina. She had been in Palestine for 10 years, but her father had survived the usual experiences here on the continent. To him, the food was satisfactory and the rooms were not bad. It was only the waiting, the impatience that results from 10 years of waiting in concentration camps and displaced person camps and now transient hotels in Paris. Argentina may prove to be no better from a materialistic viewpoint, but it will represent his goal, the achievement of which cannot be underestimated in evaluating what it will take to restore some semblance of life and happiness to some of these people. Again, I asked about Palestine, Zionism, and again the answers varied considerably. If they have people to go to in America and Canada or elsewhere, they of course want that because it represents to them some semblance of security, as does Palestine represent this very thing to others. Many older people are frightened about the war in Palestine for two reasons. One, it endangers their life and has deterred many of the older group from choosing Palestine as a place to go. But also it represents these people, to these people, the insecurity of the world and of the Jews all over the world. So for those with only a few years of life left, they say Palestine is for the young. Well, yesterday I spoke to a group of boys about 17 to 19 years of age. They were typical boys, but matured enough to understand their future problems. I was surprised to find that they had not much discussed Palestine or considered it too seriously. They were more concerned about anti-Semitism in America and what their chances would be of coming to America. But then I realized that each of these boys would go to Palestine tomorrow if it could be possible. So with them, as with other young people, America represents streets of gold, an unachievable goal. Palestine, on the other hand, has come to be a place to go, a land of their own, something to turn to if they cannot become Americans with pockets full of money. Therefore, it seems that many of these people, old and young, live now in a world of fantasy and dreams. They are not aware, actually, that coming to a Western country means survival of the fittest. Hard work, perhaps more anti-Semitism, and perhaps more charity and poverty and unhappiness. This idea is borne out only too well by a story related to me not long ago by a social worker from Belsum in Germany. He had arranged, after much difficulty, to send 400 DPs to Sweden. The proceedings previous to final acceptance by the government of Sweden were known to the people of the camp, and so they begged and pleaded to be among those sent there. These poor, disheartened Jews did not only beg to go, they actually came with packs on their backs to the station, hoping that they might slip aboard, saying to the dispatcher, "Anoch ten, another 10, so what?" The ship left with only 400. All of these 400 were happy. They were the lucky ones. Though they were happy then, they were not happy the next day. And some even complained the day the boat sailed for Sweden. This social worker had argued and pleaded and traveled and wrote consuls, ambassadors, to make this all possible. And as he escorted them to their destination, they complained, and many voiced their desire to return to Belsen, actually voicing their fear of self-reliance. Certainly, this may not be and is not 100% the case, but it indicates the conclusion to which I'm humbly but slowly arriving, that we are dealing with sick minds, unhappy people, some filled with false ideas and false propaganda, others completely insensitive to any advice, that these people are either better or resentful or tired of strife or fearful of death, others fear of anti-Semitism even more, and among these some are aware that it is prevalent, others doubt that it exists outside of Europe, and that these people, unfortunate and helpless, must be led to wherever they will be welcome, and to where they might become, once again, ambitious, good-thinking citizens. It is definitely up to us to decide, and our decisions must be implemented by work and sacrifice and determination. May 5th, I ate lunch today at a restaurant in the Jewish section of Paris, having gone there to visit the JDC canteen. The food was excellent and most inexpensive. I met a chap who has been in France 15 years, 8 of it spent in the French Army and Foreign Legion. He spoke French, German, Chinese, Italian, Yiddish, and English, so we got along well. He told me that he might go to fight for the Haganah because he fought for France and it wasn't his country, so why not for Palestine, and it will be his for the asking. I guess that's good logic. At least it reminds me that there are a few people, even in France, who agree about their future insecurity as Jews. I say even in France because there is less intolerance here than anywhere in the world. About this I intend to write more when there is more time. Wednesday, May 5th or 6th, 1:15 in the morning. This will be my last night in Paris for a while, and I think that's good to get out of here because I'm growing stale. My observations are not as acute, being sharply tempered and diverted by an acceptance of the French life that seems to come so easily, perhaps because it's a good life and easy to accept. Just a note about the French people. The French people are wonderful amidst their poverty. Here they are decently poor, if an American can visualize that. For the average man in France, there are few luxuries. To them, only rent is cheap, thanks to government control, but everything else is too expensive, such as clothes, food, cars, petrol, nightclubs, jewelry, and so on. All are beyond their reach, but somehow they manage and don't seem to mind. The subway, called the Metro, is literally packed on holidays and Sundays with people, however shabbily dressed, off to the country for a day of fun. Flowers and flower stands line the streets, and not a young girl walks without a bouquet of some sort. Perhaps lilacs or a small bunch of lily of the valley. They go on their way merrily, couples holding hands and embracing, as if life itself depended on each kiss. There is no false modesty, no shame. Nobody seems to worry to any sizable degree. If you attempted to make a purchase from a shopkeeper after 12 o'clock and before 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you wouldn't It wouldn't be possible because no one works during those hours, since there is a 2-hour lunch break. That's just an accepted fact. Shops and everything else just stops. But what is even more unusual is the accepted idea of vacations for everybody. The government requires every employee to be allowed 1 month vacation with pay. So the result is practically a complete shutdown of business during the hot months. Shopkeepers post signs, quote, sorry, closed for the summer vacation, unquote. And it is as simple as that. The Frenchman has learned to utilize the God-given pleasures, the free ones at least. They enjoy music and art and talent, of which there is plenty. Love and flowers and country air are plentiful and thrive in abundance, to the enjoyment of every man and woman. The best things in life here are free, or at least cheap. No one, however humble, would think of dining without his bottle of wine. If cars are too expensive, then a bicycle serves the purpose, and it is a usual sight to see distinguished-looking gentlemen and ladies pedaling their way about amidst the constant drone of honking horns, motorcycles, push carts, and anything else imaginable that goes on wheels.